the Student Ministry Conversations podcast. This podcast is all about equipping, encouraging, and inspiring youth pastors weekly with topics that are brought to the table by youth pastors from all over the world. And now here's your host for this week, Micah Marshall.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. If this is your first time listening to us, I want to say welcome. My name is Micah Marshall. I'm one of the hosts here on the Student Ministry Conversation podcast. And listen, if you want to connect with us on socials, if you're looking for us online, you can find us under studentministryconversations.org. That's where you can find all the previous episodes as well, show notes, blog articles, everything that we talk about here on the show. And our goal here at Student Ministry Conversations is that you will be inspired, encouraged, the things that you hear, the things that we talk about, good, bad, all of the fun stuff, everything. It's for you to be a better student pastor, youth pastor, whether you're full-time, part-time, bivocational, doesn't matter. This podcast is for you. So we hope that you enjoy it and you tune in and subscribe to everything we're doing. Today, I'm sitting down with my friend Scott Nagel, and Scott has been in youth ministry for a minute now. And Scott, thank you so much for being with us. If you could just do us a favor, tell us where you're from, how long you've been serving, a little bit more about you.
Sure. Yeah. So my name's Scott Nagel. I am a student ministries pastor at GT Church, which is in Westlawn, Pennsylvania. For those of you who aren't from Pennsylvania, it's right outside of Reading. For those of you who aren't from Pennsylvania, it's between Philadelphia and Harrisburg. And so, yeah, it's like if you're not local, we say these towns like everyone should just know what they are. I've been at my current – so I've been a youth pastor for 26 years now. I've been in my current church. I've been here for 12. And so I am the student ministries pastor at our church. We have two locations. We have a main campus and then a satellite church. And so I'm responsible for student ministries at both of those locations.
Yeah, well, and you know, Scott and I have had the privilege to be able to work on several different projects together. We've been able to do a bunch of different stuff. And for those of you that know Scott, he just does a phenomenal job in what he has done and how he has served in youth ministry. And he's been doing it, what did you say, 26 years?
Yeah, I'm really old.
26 years. Yeah, yeah. That's why I call him Big Pappy. Big Pappy, the legend. The man, the legend. But one thing, Scott, that I've always admired and that even recently that I've gotten to know more and more about your ministry and what you're doing is your ministry and where you're at, especially right now, is really founded in small groups.
Yeah, absolutely.
Small groups is huge for you. And so what I would like to do in this episode on this podcast is I would like to kind of engage with you about that.
Sure.
You know, small groups is a model. It's a type of model that we hear a lot about in church culture and ministry and all these different things. And so kind of my starting in this is like, why small groups?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, yeah.
Why is that so vital for us to do?
Yeah, so good. So I think for me over the years in my career, one of the stats that I'd heard, and now it's been about 15 years ago, was one person can know about 19 people fairly well. And so what I realized was if I don't expand my leadership, I'm only going to ever be able to lead a group of 19 people. So if I'm at a church and I only have 20 kids in my youth group, then I'm fine because it's only 19, but I'm not in that situation. And I want to be able to grow more than that. And so I learned very quickly that like, if everyone's relational connection to their leader is me, then I'm going to be in trouble. And so we have adopted small groups as a part of our ministry model here at GT Church. And we like to say it this way. We're not a church with small groups. We're a church of small groups, or at least a youth ministry of small groups. And so small groups for us is put into absolutely everything we do. So every week at our youth service, our service, we have youth on Sunday mornings during our adult service. We're at a little different. Most churches don't do it this way. Yeah, it's totally crazy.
You're the first church that I've ever experienced because I got to come and speak and share.
Yep.
And that was the craziest experience that like I have seen is youth ministry running on a Sunday morning.
Yeah. And it's what works here in our context. And I always say to people, youth lead, if you're watching this, if you're listening, what works is what works for you. And so for us, this is what works for us. And so our service is about an hour and 15 minute service. And that service is about 55 minutes service and then 20 minutes of small group time. And so every week our small groups are meeting together. When we do trips, this is where the rubber really hits the road for us, and where I really feel like this is our bread and butter, like the secret sauce for us. When we go away on trips, everything happens through small groups. So when we, you and I have been talking about going to summer camp this summer. And so like the first thing I'm doing to recruit leaders to come to camp with my students in the summer is, who are their small group leaders and their small group, can their small group leaders go? And then when we go to camp, even though it's not my camp, because we go to a district camp, I am thinking in my head, how am I organizing my students in such a way that every 7 students has one leader that they're working with for the week, for the weekend, or however we're going there. And so for us, it's about putting quality adults who love Jesus, getting them into the lives of students. And we found over the years that that's the best scenario for us. And I think the way, when I knew it was working, was the years that at the end of the school year, when students graduate or leave our ministry, and you ask them, who's the most influential leader from our ministry? And nobody says me. Like, that was really hard the first year.
Right to the heart.
What do you mean? You're my favorite student, you know? But for them to say, oh, it's Joel, it's Mike, and you know, because that's the goal and that's the win, and so that's what we do, and so we do everything we can to make sure and facilitate that transformation.
And that's just awesome. There's so much to unpack here. You know, with this, and being able, you know, being able to kind of talk about the importance of this again, like you do this on Sunday, but one thing that you do as well, though, and I didn't know this until recently, is you really try your hardest to make sure that that small group leader that has those like seventh grade boys is the same small group leader when they're 12th grade.
That's it. Yeah.
So what is, why, like, what's the process of that look like?
Yeah.
And really why? Because I know even for me, what we've done over the years, like we kind of shift our leaders around here and there, but like, what, like, why that model? Why that way?
Yeah.
I mean, but it's obviously worked.
Yes. You know? Yeah. Yeah. For us, it's about, we want to provide a quality leader for every student to walk through their journey with them to graduation. And it's the difference in our church. Again, I can only speak to my context. In elementary school, in elementary and preteen here at our church, we have like third grade leaders. And these people are great. And they've been third grade leaders for the last 10 years. And they just, they thrive, and they just want to be third grade leaders. When we get into the teenage years, we just believe it's so important to put, to have connection, that we want to see that grow. Furthermore, what we found is, if you're a youth pastor and you're watching this, you're going to understand this. If you're a seventh grade boy small group leader, and that's all you ever are, then you are content with having 4-inch deep conversations for the rest of your life, because that's about what a seventh grader can do. And so we realized the like scenario that told us, I think for us here at our church, we philosophically believe this was a great idea. That we want to put students and leaders together, and we want to have leaders that will walk their students through their journey through graduation. And and again, how do I know I'm winning? When I show up to a grad party of a student, but their small group leader's already been there for an hour, and they don't really necessarily care that I came because their small group leader's there, like, that's incredible. That's a win for us. But the one story I say that let us know what we were winning at this is, we had a guy named Joe. And Joe, at that time, we had 6th through 12th grade in our ministry. And so Joe jumped in with his boys when they were 6th graders. And Joe made the commitment. He said, I'm going to walk with my students until they graduate from high school. And in fact, Joe made such a commitment that in about 10th grade, when his boys were in 10th grade, he came to me and he's like, listen, I just need you to know, we are going to move to Charleston, South Carolina, because we love it there. But I'm not moving until my high school, my boys graduate from high school, my small group. And so the crazy part is his boys graduated in June. In August, he and his family moved to Charleston, South Carolina, because they were waiting till their kids graduate from high school. And honestly, they wanted to live by the beach. He worked from home, and his wife was like a nurse, a cardiac cath lab nurse or something, and could get a job absolutely anywhere. So it didn't matter. So they're like, yeah, we're going to go live at the beach. But when this guy was in sixth grade, he came to me at one of our retreats and he was like, Scott, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I don't think I can make it. These boys can't have a conversation to save their lives. Seventh grade, they go again because we do an annual retreat. He comes in seventh grade. He comes to us, Scott, I don't know what I'm going to do. It's been a whole year now, and I still don't know. Eighth grade, same thing. I don't know what I'm going to do. Ninth grade rolls around, and I get the text that I've gotten every Friday night of every retreat that I'm expecting it to be Joe going, I'm done. Like 4 years is enough. I can't. And I go to where he is. He's like, hey, can I talk to you? Sure, whatever. I go, and he's got tears streaming down his face, and he's like, Scott, we got into small group. And immediately my boy said, I'm struggling with this issue. How can I deal with it? And it was like a really deep issue that is high school boys, that every high school boy is dealing with. And it's not about that. So I'm not going to, but the point is, like, he was like, I'm here. And that was the turning point for him. And so we found that leaders that stick with their students for the long haul have a much greater impact than the flash in the pan, I'm only here for 6 months or only here for a school year. And then what we do, if you're watching and you're a student ministries pastor or a youth leader, a bivocational volunteer, whatever, here's how we word it. When a new leader comes to join our ministry, yeah, we've got holes. So we put them in the, you know, we put them wherever our needs are. But if we tell them this, we want you to make a school year commitment, but here's what's going to happen. You're going to fall in love with your students, and then you're going to want to stay with them, because we are looking for leaders to walk through with this class. In fact, I have a friend, Carrie, and when she's recruiting small group leaders, she doesn't say, will you be a seventh grade small group leader? She says, will you be a small group leader for the class of 20, 32? I don't even know what the number is, to be honest with you. Yeah, I should. Yeah, yeah. I need to, because I've got seventh graders coming in a couple of weeks when we're recording this. I probably need to learn that number. But like, yeah. You know, she recruits to like, hey, will you be with this class and invest in this group of students over the long haul? Yeah.
Well, I mean, and there's like, what I love about this is we're taking like the normal, hey, you're just a volunteer to help do this. And we're almost positioning them as like, they're like the youth pastor.
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, we say that oftentimes. So when we have our big retreats at the end of the retreat, we always say, you know, hey, we want to thank everyone who made this retreat possible. Thanks, worship team. Thanks, tech guys. And the last thing I always say is, hey, will all of our small group leaders stand up? And I just tell our students, I just want you to look at them and I want you to know that they're your youth pastors this weekend. Like, they are your youth pastors. I get the privilege of being called, like labeled the youth pastor. But the reality absolutely. I'm just stewarding. Mm-hmm. I'm just stewarding them. And the benefit, again, if you're a youth leader or youth pastor watching this, is if you can get this right, your reach is endless. It's the difference between leading a group of 20 students and being able to lead a group of 200 students. And I'm not saying that growth is all that matters, but if you want to have the greatest impact possible, then you need to lead in such a way to have the greatest impact possible.
Well, and you're speaking from experience. Like you're talking from experience of over, you know, almost three decades of youth ministry.
Yeah. Yeah.
What you're talking about is you've been there, done it, seen it, and so that you know that this works.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know that this is successful.
Yeah. So like just so to proof of concept, right? My first youth group, I was a youth pastor at. I had about 30 kids in my youth group, small church, 30, 40 kids. I then became a junior high pastor where I had about 50 to 100 middle schoolers, depending on the week. And now I'm a student ministries pastor, grade 7 through 12. Right now we have about 200, a little over 200 regularly attending students in our ministry now. Mm-hmm. And so it's not about size. It's not what's important. But I can tell you that embracing small groups and figuring that out is what's made it possible to lead at this level.
Yeah. And I think that could translate anywhere. I really do. Yeah, I think that could be, that could translate on any level. So, okay, we can talk about the success of small groups. Let me ask you this, Scott.
Go ahead.
Why does it that when we try this so many times, it fails?
Oh, that's a great question.
Because I know, I know for me, there's been seasons where I'm like, all right, small groups is on, and it's hot as fire.
Yes.
And then there are times where I'm like, this sucks.
Yes,
like,
this
is terrible. So why is it sometimes that it doesn't work? Why is it sometimes that we fail at this?
So first of all, the first thing I'm going to say is I'm going to date myself. And there's a – Remember the Titans is a movie from probably 20 years ago. But there's a line in Remember the Titans when Denzel Washington's a coach and they're talking about the running game or something, and he looks at the other guy and he's like, it's like Novocaine. You've just got to give it some time to work. And every time I have a season that small groups feel like it's not working, I will physically walk in my office and out loud say, it's like Novocaine. You just got to give it some time to work. I think the reason why small groups fail is, first of all, we don't give it enough time to actually succeed. Because in order for groups to succeed, it takes a long time to like get it ready and get it working and get it working well. The other reason why I think it fails is in that process of taking time, isn't it? It's a whole lot easier to just do things yourself. And you've got to be, as a leader, you have to change. If small groups are going to work well for you, it has to literally, it has to change the way you teach. I can't teach. I was talking to someone the other day about this. Actually, it might've been a video we were recording for something, another project we're working on, but I can't teach and know that at the end of teaching, I've answered every question about the topic that I'm teaching on. If small groups are working well, I'm actually creating more questions that they can talk about in their small group, and our students, our Gen Z and Gen Alpha students, can process, which research tells us that's what Gen Z and Gen Alpha students like crave. They have to process the information. And so I think that's another thing. I think sometimes
so how long would you say the timeline is? Like, when you say we don't give enough time, in your experience with what you've been doing, what would you say? How long is that timeline look?
Yeah, you have to, if you really want to change the culture and you want small groups to work, you've got to commit the next year to it. You've got to say, I'm going to make it. And in that year, I just got to tell you, it is going to be hard. And there are going to be times that it's going to feel like it's not working. And some of those, the other thing I was going to say, we talk about why does it fail? Because as the leader, I also have to shift my mindset. I have to shift my mindset from being, I am the end all. I am the voice of God in these kids' lives. I am the mouthpiece of Jesus himself, to no. I've got a bunch of leaders who are investing in these students, and Jesus is going to speak to my kids through their small group leader who I am investing in, and I am coaching them and raising them up. But it really does take time. And it's also hard. I'm not going to I don't want to sugarcoat this at all. It is hard. If you have, so I'll give you an example right now, the Sunday that you came and visited our church, we have two services on a Sunday for students. At our first service, we have 12 small groups happening. That means there are 12 group conversations that, if we're being honest, I have to make sure, one of my roles now is to make sure that 12 conversations are quality. How do I do that? I make sure that I've got the right leader in the right seat on the bus, that I've got the right leader's temperament with the right group of kids. I'm making sure that the leader has everything they need to lead conversations. I also make sure that that leader's been trained that if they talk more than the students in their small group, they're talking too long. They're not here for a second. We've had lots of leaders over the years. I've had lots of leaders in ministry that came in and said, I had one leader one time, and he came in and I was like, hey, here's our small group questions. He's like, yeah, I don't need them. I already prepared my message for today. And I'm like, what do you mean your message? Because the way our service is set up, our students literally sit through a message and then they go to small group to talk about that message. He's like, yeah, I've been, I've been writing this sermon all week. Yeah. So it's like, okay, how do we have hard conversations to say, I know you mean well, you know? And yeah, so the answer is the reason why I don't think it works sometimes is because we don't give it enough time and we don't invest in it enough. But I can also,
well, I love what you said.
Go ahead. No, go for it.
I love what you said about the quality of the conversations, and making sure that those are vital for you as a leader, because what I really believe is you are, you know, you're creating not just the questions that go along with the small group to initialize conversations, but you're putting the right people in the right room. Right. So the right conversation happens. Like, you know, I do small groups on Wednesdays, and I'm just a leader sometimes. And so sometimes I'll have the middle school boys, and like, you'll ask a question and you are going to get like the craziest answer.
You know,
and like the on topic thing. But, I know that you oftentimes talk about this is, you know, like, how do we engage those students to talk about spiritual things?
Yeah. So we have a couple phrases in our ministry, and this is what we say. As a small group leader, there's two phrases we always tell our small group leaders. Number one, you have to build a relational bridge that can withstand the weight of truth. So let's hit that. Let that sit in for a minute. You have to build.
Say that one more time for us.
You have to build a relational bridge that can withstand the weight of truth. And then to back that up, what we say is your students won't talk to you about spiritual things or serious things until they know they can talk to you about anything. And so we kind of put it this way with our students. You know, when we're getting ready to go on a retreat or a camp or something, we kind of say it this way. You earn the right to speak into their lives on the basketball court or at the lunch table or in the snack bar or – you know, or on the sideline of their game, cheering them on. You don't earn the right to speak into their lives when you sit in a circle and you say, hi, I'm your small group leader. Like, there is nothing. It's funny. You are like the king and pro of Gen Z and Gen Alpha research, Micah. And so, like, you could probably back this up. There is nothing in this generation that will respond to, I'm the leader, you should listen to me.
Yeah.
Right.
And
so, and so we just have to be good. Good.
Yeah. Well, and the terminology I use often, and you know, it's one of these things that I kind of just brought on and just talk about is relational equity, right?
Yep.
Relational.
Yeah. So good.
That is something that's super important. And in that small group, if you're not building that equity of relationship, there ain't going to be no relationship, right?
Right.
You're not
right.
gaining that, because that relationship leads to the respect. The respect leads to the open door. The open door leads to truth being spoken.
Yeah. So good.
And I think that's really one of those things. And, but I mean, I love that. I love that concept of a year, giving it about a year, implementing it, realizing that you have to check your ego and step. It's no longer about you. It's about them.
Yeah.
Being able to step outside of that, you know, and even for me, I've been in youth ministry for 15 years. And when we first started, back then it was, early 2000s, we're talking about, the lights, the sound, the fog machine, the haze machine, the louder, the better, the preaching, everything was based around the culture of environment that you can produce. And now we're here so many years later, and like, we can't compete with culture anymore.
No,
so
no.
We can't compete with all of that. But what we can do is we can bring them into youth group with relational moments and memories where we're connecting and building.
Yeah.
And that ultimately is what you're doing with small groups.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, I love, like, there's nothing that makes me happier than when one of our like seventh or eighth grade students sprints into our room because they see their small group leader. Like, I'll tell you what, so we're recording this, and you know, who knows when you're going to listen to this, but we're recording this the week of Easter. And one of the things I love at my church, because again, we have service on Sunday mornings for our students. We don't meet Easter Sunday. I love on Easter Sunday when I walk through the hallways in my church, like watching my like teenagers high five their small group leaders in the hallway of the church outside of our, you know, and it's like, hey, what's up? What's up? What's up? You know? And so it just shows that like, yeah, they've earned that credibility, that relational equity to say, hey, I want to speak into your life. How are you doing?
Yeah.
How are you really doing? You know? Yeah, and that's earned.
So good. Yeah. So good. Yeah, so good. I mean, just the importance of it. You know, and I think this thing is too is you don't have to have a large youth ministry to do small groups.
Yep. No, and I would say it this way. If you have 10 kids, you have enough kids for small groups. You should have two small groups if you have 10 students. Because a conversation with five kids is really manageable. It's great. Everybody gets to participate and be involved. You know, we in our ministry, we divide our small groups by gender and grade. And so it's guys and girls and then by class. Yeah. And then the other thing we do as we grew. So there were, again, doing this for 26 years. There was a period of time when all of the research from like the hottest youth ministry, whatever you would call it years ago, was, well, you know, when a group gets to 10 or 15, you put another leader in there and then you split the group and create and they would use terms like, congratulations, you're going to get to birth a new group, which first of all sounds disgusting, but but like, you know, and so, and I always thought, like, when I would listen to that, I literally went to conferences where I sat in breakouts taking copious notes about how this was supposed to happen. And then I would come home to my group and I would go to my group that had 15, 20 girls in it and say, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're going to put another leader in here and then we're going to split this group in half and you're going to get to form two new groups. And my girls essentially told me, if you do that, we will leave. Because I want to be with my friends, because this is where I feel comfortable. This is where I feel family. Yeah. And so, again, it has to do with whatever you have in your ministry. So what we found, our solution now, is we throw more leaders at the problem. So if your group – so right now my 11th grade girls group, we're going to go to our retreat in a couple of weeks, and they're probably going to have 20 girls. I'm not exaggerating. They're going to have 20 11th grade girls at this retreat in one small group. They're going to have three or four leaders with them. And then what we tell those leaders is, hey, when you're having discussion time, why don't you just say, hey, for this next discussion time, we're going to break down into groups of five. And you guys are going to go over here. But we're still one big group. And we're going to be within, you know, eyesight of each other. And we're just a group within a group. And so, for again, what works is what works. The right way is what works. So that's what worked for me. But I'm sorry, back to answer your question. Yes, if you have 10 kids in your ministry, you should start small groups, and you should do that right then, right then and there.
Well, yeah, and I love that because you actually answered a few of the questions that I had for someone that's saying, hey, I've never done small groups. What does this look like? So being able to break down by grades, gender, being able to break down groups within groups, being able to throw leaders, so many good things.
Yeah, and then hang on. I'd love to add, sorry. Yeah. Let me add one more thing. Yeah. If you're going to start doing groups, you also have to equip your leaders – to run those groups. And so let me tell you what that looks like in the current world that we live in. Because listen, it has never been easier to do this. What that means for us is we are giving our small group leaders discussion questions based on what we know we are teaching. It's never been easier because AI exists in our world right now. And so, and I'll just tell you, so we go to ChatGPT, the free version, and I put my outline of my message in there and I say, write me 15 discussion questions based on this outline for middle and high school students. And within 20 seconds, I have 15 questions. I then go through the questions and say, which ones fit what I want to have conversations about, right? And then that's what I'm equipping my leaders with. See, I think, so in other words, when you're starting, you have to keep in mind that you have to equip your leaders. You can't just assume that they're just going to walk into a circle of kids and know how to process whatever you just taught.
No, that's excellent. Yeah. That's excellent. I love that. Well, I mean, that's just so much good stuff here. So much amazing content and all that. So, Scott, do me a favor. If people would like to reach out to you or check out your ministry.
I'm too old.
Can you Yeah, can you let us know, like, sure, what does that look like if they want to contact you and talk to you a little bit more? Because we will drop this in the show notes as well. So for anyone that might have questions about
Sure. It's so funny. I met your wife last week and she asked me, she said, "You have an Instagram, but is it actually active? Because I don't post on Instagram," right? And so my name is Scott Nagel. You can email me. We'll put my email in the show notes. That's probably the best bet, honestly. Yeah. My email is scottnagel@gtaog.org. Our church is gtchurch.online, and so I run the student ministries there. You can find us on Instagram at gt.sm is our student ministries. You can always reach out to our student ministries there, and it'll get to me. I don't run our social media because, well, did you not hear I've been in this for 26 years? I don't really know how. So,
And that's why we call him Big Papi.
That's it. There you go.
That's it. Well, Scott, thank you so much.
No, thank you. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Hey, make sure you tune in, studentministryconversations.org. We have so many amazing guests, so much great content that is out there to be able to help you be a better youth pastor or bivocational, doesn't matter, part-time, doesn't matter, volunteer, whatever you're doing. We have content for you, so make sure you check it out. Until the next episode, we'll see you later.
See you later. Thanks.